Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org.
You want the good news or the bad news first?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Okay, I'll start with this morning's positive economic news. The Commerce Department said retail sales were up 0.3% last month. It's a pretty big deal because economists were expecting exactly the opposite, a 0.3% drop. And it's a small sign that people are still spending money even though they held back over the holidays. The report has put Wall Street in a bit of a buying mood this morning. So far, the Dow is up 87 points to 12,461. The NASDAQ has gained 22. The S&P 500 is up 7. European shares are a mixed bag so far, and that was the story in Asia today. Now for the bad news. We got a report today on last year's home foreclosure numbers around the country. Ugh. Marketplace's Jana Babin reports from North Carolina Public Radio.
The Realty Track report shows two major scenarios that caused foreclosure rates to hit nearly 5%. One is driven by high unemployment. That's affected places like Detroit, that topped the list. For parts of California, Las Vegas, and Florida, the problem is the busted housing bubble. Economist David Weiss with Standard & Poor's expects foreclosure rates will continue to rise this year.
The usual pattern is that foreclosures don't peak until about a year after the housing market turns around, and we don't expect the housing market to turn around until the second half of this year.
Weiss says foreclosures will continue to drag down the economy until the middle of 2009. A Bush administration bailout announced yesterday could help. It'll give some homeowners a 30-day foreclosure reprieve. But Weiss says that won't stop the fundamental problem with the market, that people can't afford the homes they purchased. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Now that the writer's strike is over, director Steven Spielberg has turned to boycotting the Summer Olympics in Beijing. Spielberg has withdrawn as an artistic advisor for the opening and closing ceremonies. He says he won't be associated with China's policies toward Sudan. Bill Marcus has more.
China's a big oil customer of Sudan. China also supplies Sudan with weapons. That's why Spielberg says he quit. He said China should do more to help end the human suffering in Sudan's Darfur region. Human rights activists say Spielberg's move sets a moral standard. One public relations manager says it's a worrying development that'll probably keep Olympic advertisers up at night. But, on the record, PR firms are playing it cool. None of the firms contacted for this story would name their clients. Christian Merck's firm, APCO, manages an Olympic sponsor.
This issue has been discussed in the public forum for a long time. You know, it's not a particularly new issue.
China's official press, which hardly lets a day go by without some mention of the Olympics, was silent today. If you wanted to read about Spielberg's action in China, you had to pick up a paper in Hong Kong, where the media isn't controlled by the state. In Shanghai, I'm Bill Marcus for Marketplace.
Back in the 1950s, Disneyland used to have an attraction called the House of the Future. Inside, you could see the wondrous marvels that would someday grace your home. Wall-sized TVs, electric toothbrushes, and those curvy plastic chairs. Well, this spring, Disneyland's bringing back the House of the Future. It's collaborating with Microsoft, Hewlett-Packard, and some other companies on this $15 million project. Visitors will experience the look of tomorrow by watching a family of actors prepare for a trip to China. In their home, they'll have kitchen counters that can recognize their groceries and suggest a dinner menu. They'll have closets that tell them what to wear, and probably some curvy plastic chairs. This is the Morning Report for Wednesday, February 13th on Marketplace.org. The move to digital TV is about a year away now. Today on Capitol Hill, a consumer group releases a report about this transition. Lisa Napoli reports.
You might think people who sell TVs would be hip to what you need to get ready for the transition to digital television. Turns out you'd be wrong.
There's still a lot of misinformation out there that retailers
don't have their staff properly educated, and that consumers have to be very careful when navigating through this digital transition.
That's Ed Mierzwinski of the Public Interest Research Group. He says consumer groups like his are worried that people might be tricked into buying pricey new televisions. Turns out anyone with a newer TV or with cable or satellite doesn't need to do a thing. But if you're one of the 22 million Americans with an older TV and no cable or satellite, you need a converter box. The government will even offset the cost of the box by sending you a $40 coupon for up to two sets per household. Remember, you've got a year to get ready. In Los Angeles, I'm Lisa Napoli for Marketplace.
When Congress essentially banned internet gambling, British gaming companies cried foul. One of those companies was called 888. But 888 just turned in a super profit report for the latest quarter. And the company's boss now says he's glad the U.S. got rid of internet betting. From London, Stephen Beard has more.
The U.S. legal clampdown on internet betting in 2006 hit 888 hard. The company lost more than half its revenues. But today, business is recovering. Full-year figures just released show a 36% jump in sales. The company's rebuilt its fortunes, concentrating on the European market and launching new products like online bingo. The boss is now reveling in the company's expulsion from the U.S. He says we're better for it, more efficient and more focused. Analyst David Buick agrees.
They know actually where they're going, and they know that there are plenty of places to expand their business, whether they eventually decide to go to South Africa or to the Far East, where they're not going to walk into a blockbuster of a problem called litigation.
He expects the whole online gaming business to do well, even if there's a global economic slowdown. He says in hard times, people usually keep on gambling. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Since September 11th, foreigners entering the U.S. have had their fingerprints scanned into a database. Now, European officials are considering a similar security measure. The European Union is unveiling a proposal today to require visitors from outside the EU to be fingerprinted. Nancy Marshall Genzer takes a look.
April in Paris. Ella Fitzgerald sang about a warm embrace in Paris. Well, Paris's embrace could soon be even hotter. The fingerprinting proposal would allow police to track visitors closely. University of Portland finance and transportation professor Richard Gritta predicts most business travelers, though, would just knuckle under.
It's just another part of doing business. I get fingerprinted and heck with it.
They could even decide to pay more to have their irises scanned for fast tracking. Mark Rotenberg is executive director of the Electronic Privacy Information Center. He says tourists might balk at iris scans and fingerprints.
You want to take pictures and remember nice memories. You don't want to be standing in front of a fingerprint reader giving them your 10 print.
The EU has already given preliminary approval to another plan that forces airlines to provide data on passengers' credit cards and addresses. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Microsoft versus Google looms as a great corporate battle this year. Yahoo rejecting Microsoft's buyout bid this week is only round one. But whatever happens next, commentator Robert Reich says the victor won't be decided in Redmond, Washington, or in Sunnyvale, California.
Microsoft wants to move into the lucrative online search and advertising business. Google naturally doesn't want it to. The pawn is the ailing Yahoo. But if you think the final outcome will be decided by the shareholders of Yahoo and Microsoft, you don't know the real power plays or players. You see, Google and Microsoft both maintain armies of lobbyists and lawyers in Washington. The two firms also have political action committees, which give generously to congressional leaders and members of antitrust committees on both sides of the aisle. Now, I'm not suggesting outright payoffs. The money will open important doors that the two armies will enter with their paid experts and their finely honed arguments. And, of course, their implicit promises of future campaign donations. And eventually, after many months or even years and millions more in payments from Microsoft and Google, one of these armies will win. Officially, the question to be debated in Washington will be whether it's more dangerous for Microsoft to use Yahoo to extend its Windows operating system's market power on the Internet, or for Google to gain increasing dominance over the Internet unopposed. But the answer will depend on which company's Washington army is biggest, richest, and cleverest. That's how lots of big economic decisions are made these days. Washington is engulfed in corporate money because of just this sort of arms race. Shareholders don't win. The public doesn't win. The only winners are Washington's lobbyists and lawyers themselves, whose numbers and earnings continue to mushroom. One group that should be taking the lead in ending the arms race and cleaning up Washington are the big institutional investors that are investing in both Microsoft and Google and every other set of major competitors, and whose shareholders would be better off if the race ended. The big institutions should be demanding mutual de-escalation.
Robert Reich was Labor Secretary under President Clinton. He now teaches public policy at the University of California at Berkeley. If you'd like to share your thoughts with us and with other listeners, visit the Marketplace Confessional. It's online at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.